The Heat Doctor on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with Boyles of Killorglan, the home of quality.
Yeah, David O'Sullivan, DC Energy Solutions with us on the line. David, good morning to you and thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning to all the listeners.
Okay, we're going to start with this one. Hello, Heat Doctor. I'm just wondering why when I put the air vent over the cooker in the sitting room, it fills up with the smell of soot. It's something that puzzles me, asked this listener.
Air vent over the cooker.
That's this is your
puzzling, right, Jerry?
Yeah.
I suppose.
When they turn it on, I suppose, when they put the hood, the extraction hood, I'd imagine, over the cooker, they get the smell of soot.
They get the smell of soot, but I suppose there's a couple of different issues here with those types of extractors or the different types of extractors over cookers. I suppose, firstly, is it direct extract to external, so going out through a vent in the wall? Or secondly, is it just a filter, charcoal filter built into the extractor in itself? I suppose if it's the latter, Jerry, it can be a case of having to change filters. This is something that regularly needs to be done anyway in these extractor fans, if we're talking about the right thing. But I suppose if it's a solid fuel cooker and there's an extractor, it may be something different. So I suppose, look, there's a couple of questions I would have back to that homeowner just for a bit of clarity before we diagnose what the solution is to the problem.
What kind of a cooker do they have? What kind of a vent do they have? Is it a filter vent or is it straight to external?
Yeah, exactly that. And I suppose, look, Jerry, these vents that are installed, the extractor fans that are installed over cooking appliances, you know, they're sized correctly. When they're put into different types of houses, I suppose you have a situation where with airtight houses, for example, Jerry, with modern HRV systems, heat recovery ventilation systems, you know, there's different types that they recommend. So I suppose a charcoal filter can be quite common. But again, it's a maintenance issue. There is ways of doing that, I suppose. Make sure you isolate the power to the appliance before you go taking off any of the covers. Most of them don't require any screwdrivers. There's just clip-off covers. And internally, then you have a filter, a charcoal filter, and a cotton filter or cloth filter. Those are readily available. Again, they're readily available through the suppliers. Contact Boyles and Clark, and they definitely have an array of appliances and replacement parts for those units. But again, I suppose for that homeowner specifically, there'd be a few questions that I'd have before I'd give them, I suppose, a direct diagnosis. And when you have a smell of soot, Jerry, and or smoke, I suppose we have a concern here, you know, with carbon monoxide levels, so making sure our carbon monoxide alarm is working properly, smoke alarm is working properly.
Important as well.
I've just been cautious. I'm being cautious, I suppose, and broad in the answer to the homeowner because we don't have all the information. But I suppose, look, if they want to contact me, please feel free to do so.
Okay. Another listener gets in touch and says, I'm installing solar panels and I'm also buying a plug-in hybrid electric car. I wish to know, can I use battery storage from the solar panels to plug into my car to charge it if there's a power cut? And also, can I use the battery storage from solar power instead of a generator to power the minimum requirements to my house, like the heating circulating pump? Asked Patrick.
There's a lot of questions from Patrick, and good on him. I suppose he's planning ahead and thinking of what the best solutions are here for the installation of solar and, I suppose, the purchase of a hybrid car. So ticking a lot of boxes here, and well done, Patrick. But I suppose, Jerry, this is a very, very, very long-winded conversation. I suppose the direct answers are yes, there is ways of allowing that the PV solar system will charge the car. It's dependent on the installation of batteries and, I suppose, time frames and when you're doing so. It can be quite, I suppose, a simple process and it can be set up. It's to do with the car charger. It's to do with the inverter size. It's to do with the inverter type, making sure it's a hybrid. And I suppose then there's ways of programming it that you can make sure that either the battery is discharging at nighttime when you're not generating solar PV and you're charging your car, or it's going to the house, or in fact going to the grid. Or during the day, you're using the solar to generate your energy to, again, charge your car, use your appliances. The second part of that, Jerry, I suppose, is the use of solar when there is a power cut. And I suppose the last storm that we all went through, that was never more evident, I suppose, for people, especially some people, I think, in North Kerry, Jerry, that were weak without power. You know, this is something, I suppose, that is more prevalent in our installs and a lot of questions that have been asked. But yes, I suppose the direct answer is there is a switch that can be installed, a changeover switch. This changeover switch, I suppose, is a manual changeover. So if you have a power cut, you use the changeover switch to change back to the PV system. In doing so, it uses your battery storage to power the house. Now, my question would be, would there be enough storage in the battery to charge the car? It depends, again, on the size of the battery in the car, the size of the requirements. But I suppose, typically speaking, your battery install is going to dictate, or your battery size is going to dictate what your output is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's possible to do it. Depends on the size, though, of it as well, and how long it would last for. And would it be enough power in that battery, or for how long to power the heat circulating pump? All, I suppose, open questions in terms of when a power cut hits.
Sizes of those units, I suppose, are dictated by the sizes of the house, I suppose, Jerry. So that's relevant as well. But I suppose one of the things here, I suppose, to make clear to people is solar PV systems stop generating or stop storing power to the battery when there's a power cut. There's a switch in place that stops this from happening. The reason for that switch is for safety for the workers on the power lines externally. So what you don't want having to happen is that you're generating electricity in your house, you have someone working on a pole or DSP line outside, which has happened with the power cuts, and there's a trickle of voltage back through the power, considering they've turned it off on the other side. So I suppose that's the layman terms of wording it, that, you know, it's a safety feature that it stops doing this. The changeover switch that can be installed at the time of purchase of the PV system. They can also be retrofitted. There's a few terms and conditions, obviously. We always get asked prices on this, and I suppose it's a very hard one to give an answer on an exact cost, but I suppose allowing a budget of between 1,000 and 2,000 euros would typically get you in a position of putting this changeover switch in place and allowing, I suppose, the use of the PV system and the batteries when you have a power cut.
Yeah,
it's not,
that's considered too.
Clear, Jerry, this is not an automatic system. This is something that's manual, that you do have to turn the switch to the PV or turn the switch back to the ESP, just to make that clear.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's Patrick's question answered. All right. David, stay with us. Lots more queries to get to. Get any more into us on our numbers right now. We'll have more with the Heat Doctor after we take these.
The Heat Doctor on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with Boyles of Killorglan, the home of quality.
You're on the line with David O'Sullivan of DC Energy Solutions, our Heat Doctor. And David, Donal asks, can a plumber replace a hot tank immersion heater element, or does it have to be an electrician?
Oh, there's a dangerous question for a dangerous answer, Jerry, I suppose. Both can happen, but I suppose the direct answer and the safest way to answer this question is your plumber replaces the element and your electrician connects the element.
Yeah.
There is a process here where both tradesmen are involved, and I know where this is going to go, Jerry. I can hear it already in the background of now I'm paying two tradesmen to do the one job.
Yeah.
I suppose you are combining, and this is the ever ongoing, I suppose, argument, discussion and confrontation between the electrician, who is of course the better tradesman, and the plumber.
Yeah.
So I suppose, Jerry, look, it's the direct answer is you need both tradesmen to do that work.
Whenever you're doing power and water together, you just have to be careful.
I can hear the arguments already, Jerry. I can hear the conversations going on about how much people are charging for this, but I suppose you are combining 230, 240 volts in a wet tank system, and yes, they have protection in the fuse board with RCDs and RCBOs, and there's a switch in place that can isolate the cable, but I suppose for peace of mind and to comply with safety and all guidelines and regulations, it requires both tradespeople.
Okay, what's the Heat Doctor's thoughts on a DCV or HRV system in a newly built house? Insulation cost and long-term running cost implications.
Yeah, absolutely, Jerry. These are, I suppose, modern ventilation systems. DCV standing for demand control ventilation. HRV standing for heat recovery ventilation. I suppose we know a lot about heat recovery because it's most prevalent in new builds. And there is, I suppose, building regulations and guidelines that have to be adhered to when it comes to the installation of ventilation in both new builds, but also in retrofitting any upgrade measures to existing houses. And I suppose the SEI have in place, when you claim any grants, that you have to comply with the building regulations in regards to ventilation. My own preference, I suppose, is, and it's not to compare our different systems from different systems, but I suppose heat recovery ventilation is I suppose a better form in some elements, in some situations for installation. And the DCV demand control has its applications for retrofitting measures, but I suppose, talking to the suppliers, Jerry, you can get both options, and I suppose both options are designed for your house specifically to give you the correct ventilation. You don't want the incorrect ventilation. That can be quite harmful to the house, so make sure it's designed correctly by the supplier or the installer. In regards to running costs, I don't think I would see a massive difference between either or. I suppose typically a heat recovery ventilation system is left on permanently, and is it is doing its own thing by again design and by the movement of air either internally or externally. With demand control ventilation, I suppose by its wording, demand control, the extract systems can work continuously, but on the walls then you have vents that open by humidity levels in rooms. So I suppose you don't have a continuous moving part there. It may open and close according to humidity. And I suppose the final answer then is, which would I go with? I suppose from my opinion, if it's affordable, the HRV probably. But typically speaking, again, here, HRV is more expensive than DCV, and that can be by up to 25 to 30%. So I suppose doing your homework, doing your due diligence on it, getting the prices, getting the design correct, you'll get your decision based on, I suppose, based on budgetary, but also based on, I suppose, the best system suitable for the house and designed properly.
Yeah, okay, interesting view on that. Another query to get to here. A listener says, well, there's two insulation questions, really. Can one gable of a house be insulated on the outside? And another listener asking, look, are there grants for getting homes insulated? Would like to maybe get cladding on the outside, but worried about the cost. Now, there are grants available. We know the SEI is ready to go to, but that gable question as well, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose there's nothing wrong per se with different types of insulation installed on different areas of the walls. But I suppose to be clear here, Jerry, and it's part two of that answer in regards to grants, I suppose, and we just stick with external insulation. There's grants available, obviously, for different types of wall insulation. But for external wall insulation, there's grants for different types of houses again. So mid-terrace, in-terrace, you know, you have your semi-detached, detached houses. And I suppose these grants vary from €3,000 up to €8,000. However, and I suppose there's a caveat in this, and it the grants are applicable to 100% of the house. So therefore, you must insulate 100% of the house. From our experience in dealing with the SEI, insulating one gable with external and pumping the walls, the rest of the walls, and or dry lining the rest of the walls, the house then is not applicable for the external insulation grant. It is more applicable to the measure that covers more than 50% of the wall area. I'm getting a bit technical here, Jerry, but it's beat into us, I suppose, by the SEI and trying to follow the guidelines. So I suppose, you know, it becomes a cost exercise, but also I suppose my own experience here, externally insulating one wall and not doing the rest doesn't necessarily give you the best result for the house. It wouldn't give you maximum heat retention. And I suppose my question is, why are they only insulating one wall? Is there a plaster issue? Is there a water ingress issue? You know, is it the north-facing wall of the house? Is it cold? So it's an assessment of the entire dwelling and combining the overall costs with the deduction of the grant, as I said, up to €8,000.
Yeah.
Then the homeowner may be in a position where they will see insulating 100% of the house might be more beneficial and cost-effective. And I suppose it brings it back to our previous question of ventilation, making sure you install the correct ventilation at the time of the install. Now, Jerry, I suppose the last thing, and it'd be remiss not to mention that, is with the external insulation grant, there's a minimum requirement on the BER scale, but also there is a situation where the attic must be insulated and our heating controls installed. All those regulations, all the amounts, all the terms and conditions are available on the SEI.ie. And I suppose there's some great information there for any of the listeners that are considering external, any insulation, but external insulation, there's some great information there.
Yeah. Okay. Caller David has an oil boiler, 22 years old, a Firebird / Super 5082. There's a terrible burning smell after a few hours of use. Would the heat doctor have any explanation?
I guess the answer is in the question with this one, Jerry. At 22 years old, I suppose you have components that are breaking down within the boiler. But I suppose the Firebird boiler, again, supplied through Boils and Clark, then go and have a chat with them. I guess, look, they're everlasting. They're fantastic. They do their job. I mean, there's other types out there, don't get me wrong. I'm not just endorsing one type, but I suppose what you have is if you have a burning smell and or a kerosene smell, then
there's
you're
something wrong.
To get to a technician.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. It's not that the correct air coming in. It could be a filter blocked. You have, again, a combustible appliance here, Jerry, and I suppose, you know, carbon monoxide alarms, smoke alarms. I'm saying all these things, I suppose, not to worry the homeowner, but to make sure they get something done as soon as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Would David recommend installation of a pellet stove in a very small two-bedroom cottage? Would it be sufficient to heat the home? Now, I don't know if it's connected to rads or what, but yeah.
Yeah, I suppose that there's different types that are here in regards to the pellet stoves. And yes, they're fantastic. They're classed as renewable sources of heat with the wood pellets that you can burn with them. A two-bedroom house, I know that's the wording there, but I suppose it's the size of the room that the pellet stove is going into if it's room heater only. If it's going to be generating heat for radiators, then it's the overall size of the dwelling and location of the pellet stove that needs to be calculated here. A very, very simple thing. Draw a sketch of the house, put the measurements of the rooms on there. If you can even measure the radiators, if they're on there, go to Boyle's, bring that information with you, and it'll be size correct.
And you'll get some answers.
Get some answers very, very quickly.
Briefly, similar question. A listener, Rachel, has a 123-year-old cottage. It's been insulated, new door, triple glazed windows put in. Is a heat pump a good idea?
So 123 years old, I know what we're all going to say here. Is it a good idea, bad idea? Is the house going to retain the heat, not retain the heat? I suppose directly here for Rachel, a technical assessment would give that information. It might get to a figure that that gives the information with the HLI, which is the heat loss indicator. This is the heat loss per meter squared of living space in the house. It's a calculation of that. I might add there, Jerry, actually, as of February 2025, any houses pre-2007 that are considering installing a heat pump can declare that they don't have to carry out a technical assessment. And once they have a valid BER, which shows a HLI greater than or equal to 2.3, that information is available on the SEI website.
So that's an easy of the restrictions there. Yeah.
Yes, for Rachel, the heat pump can be installed. It's just get the correct information before she starts.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, David, and great stuff. Again, answering all those queries. More from the Heat Doctor this time next month. It's David O'Sullivan, DC Energy Solutions. Final comment in the show, comment on Sean O'Shea. Great to hear Sean on the radio today. Still full of divilment as he always was. Congrats from Noel Broderick listening in Dublin. And thanks for all your comments today and all this week. The producer of the programme was Mark Lynch. We had Niamh Daly on sound today and Liam Nix taking your calls and comments. Stay tuned. Francis on the way with the 11 to 1 Club. Have a great weekend and we'll talk to you Monday morning.